Hello, everyone. I'm Trent Luce. Welcome to Luce Trails and Tales. We take an extended look at the people and the places in rural America, or in this case, rural Canada. No matter where we go, what we do, it's all made possible by Superior Livestock Auction. More information about marketing cattle the Superior Way. Online, www.superiorlivestock.com. The Old American Beef Battalion continuing to say thank you to our nation's soldiers, sailors, airmen, marines, coast guardians, and national guardsmen. More information about you contributing at stakesfortroops.com. And my favorite destination in the nation is just south and east of, I had to think where we're at, Edmonton. We're in West Edmonton, Alberta. Right, Holly?
That's correct.
Medora, North Dakota, on the web, medorand.com. I am with the just elk breeders. I thought maybe there would be some deer breeders, but elk breeders of Alberta here in West Edmonton. Holly Bammer is the lead social chairman and volunteered to join me on the air to explain all things good about the cervid sector in Alberta. Welcome to the program, Holly.
Thank you very much.
Did you know that Connie designated you as the chairman of the social committee?
No, I sure did not.
Well, you'll have to talk to her about that afterwards, and the spokesperson. So it's a pleasure to meet you.
Well, thank you very much.
Who's at this meeting? First of all, kind of give our listeners a general view of who attends this meeting.
All the elk producers across Alberta, and then quite a few that come in from Saskatchewan, Manitoba as well.
How many are there in general, just producers?
I think there's probably 75 producers in Alberta. I'm not sure what's in the rest of the provinces.
Mm-hmm. Is that up or down? Is it trending which way?
It's down. Probably 15 years ago, there was probably close to 500 farms in Alberta. Now I think we're down to about 160 or something like that.
500 farms down to 160, that's not a good trend, Holly.
I know it's not a good trend.
What brought that about?
First of all, it was the prices of the animals and the antler, and that prices dropped, and then we had a hard time recovering from that. But now we are on an incline, and I think it's helping to keep the industry going, and we're really hoping to bring in more producers.
In fact, I just sat through some very interesting presentations that the marketing arm of elk as a protein source has done a tremendous job. The problem is coming up with enough of a supply to meet the demand. That's kind of an incredible scenario.
Well, it is. And with the numbers of the farms being down, that's really, you know, hit that industry really hard. But you also did hear that we have more than one commodity within the elk industry. We have the antler, we have the meat, we have the hunt bulls. So, you know, that creates a better market than just strictly a meat market.
I don't know that my folks listening know or not, but I certainly do because I've spent plenty of time with deer and elk breeders and producers in the States. You can eliminate that border. The issues are absolutely no different. There has been a huge challenge for people to have their own hunt ranch. I don't understand that, but that's one reason that we're here, is to make sure that people can utilize their property as they see fit, and if it's have a fence up and invite people to come in to pay to go hunting, so be it.
Well, yes, that's definitely in Alberta. We would love to have that. I know in Saskatchewan they can do hunt farms, but here in Alberta we can't. So, yes, we do ship animals to Saskatchewan from here as well across the border into the U.S.
How long has that been? I guess there's a provincial ban on that in Alberta?
We've never been able to do it since the industry started going back in the early 80s. We've never been able to change that regulation in Alberta.
Has there ever been an attempt to change it?
Oh, yes. It's an ongoing attempt to change it, but we haven't been able to master that regulation yet.
The selling of the meat itself seems to be like a growing endeavor, and you mentioned there's another aspect that you're directly involved with, and that is elk antler could be put in a capsule. Kind of give the background behind that business.
Well, we raise our own animals, but we also buy from other producers across Canada, and we manufacture the elk antler into a capsule for a natural health product to sell to retail stores, and we do online sales, and then as well just the powder in for other people to buy that want to further process it into capsules and that type of natural health product.
The demand for that, I remember Korea and Asian countries was always the target for that as the primary market. Is that still the case, or is there quite a bit of domestic consumption?
It's all domestic and, well, North America mainly because of the ban. We no longer can ship to China or Korea the processed elk antler. And we are working with CFIA and the Chinese regulators to lift that ban so we can bring the product in. They want it there, but again, government regulations are prohibiting it. So our market right now is strictly North American for the elk antler capsules.
Mm-hmm. What's the benefit of that for the human consumption?
The biggest benefit is joint health. And as we've been doing it over the years, it's been really good for athletes. So it gives them better stamina, quicker recovery time as well. So joint health and definitely energy and overall health.
The trade between the United States and Canada in that regard and from your standpoint has been good?
It's been good. There are regulations. USDA does continue to change their import rules, so sometimes that poses a bit of a holdback in getting the product there, but usually we can get it there with, you know, a little bit of time restraint, and then we get it there. Probably the easiest place to ship it is the U.S. right now. We do ship to Vietnam as well, and that is a fairly easy trade. As long as Canada has a trade negotiation with a country, then we can ship it in, and that's where the China and Korea, we don't have a trade negotiation with them.
Isn't it true that they've just found ways to use fabricated, unscientific information about CWD as a means of throwing up a trade barrier for Canada and the United States?
I think that's definitely something that they do. As far as for myself with the antler processing, it hasn't been an issue. With animal trade, it is, but not with the antler.
Oh.
Yeah.
I remember back 12 years ago, we were fighting that in the States, and they were using that as one of the barriers. So it's good to know that we've cleared that up.
Yeah, definitely for the antler, it's cleared up.
How long have you been working with the animal elk itself?
We started in 86 raising animals, and then in 95 we started with the processing plants.
I've not worked with them other than being on some farms and spending some time with guys, you know, looking at the working corrals and how different it would be than my beef cattle operation. But why do you like working with the animal yourself, Holly?
Well, for one thing, there isn't a lot of work to do with the elk. For us, especially because we're just raising the animal for the antler. So we handle them once a year, which is in June. Take the antler off. The animal goes back out to pasture. Feed them in the winter, and you really, there's very little handling of them. So it's, you know, there's not a lot of time spent with the animal.
You don't go out hunting the antler from the ground. I'm sure most people think you just go out there, wait for it to shed the antler, and then go pick it up, right?
No, that's not true. Typically, antler starts to grow in the spring, the new antler. So if it did have a rack on it, the new antler would push the old rack off, and the new antler would grow, and it would grow for the whole year again back to March again, and it would fall off and start a new one. But for us, we will take it off in June when it has the most active ingredient still in it. So it's still soft. It's in the velvet stage where it has the velvet covering still on it.
I've always been impressed because I've always been somewhat of a genetic nerd. I like to follow genetics on certain bulls, certain horses, stallions, or boars, whatever the case may be. But I've clearly seen that genetics have a propensity in the elk or the deer business because a bigger racked sire is going to make a difference in that next generation. So genetics matter even when it comes to antler production.
Definitely, you'll get a bigger rack. As far as the medicinal value, I don't think it makes any difference whether you have an animal that's not producing this giant rack that you would maybe want as a trophy animal for your wall. They still all produce antler. It all has the same medicinal value in it.
I thought there would be a yield difference.
Definitely,
in terms of the amount that you get.
Definitely a yield difference, for sure. But not medicinal difference.
Hmm. Yeah, that's all interesting. Holly, what have I not asked that people would find interesting about the business of elk?
Well, one of the things I know, if you're comparing it to beef animals, you can feed five bull elk to one beef cow. So cost for feeding is a lot less. Area that you hold the animals in, you could probably house 100 head of elk on one quarter of land, and I don't think you could do that with beef cows.
No, well, not and expect them to forage and find their own food.
That's right, yeah. So for a whole summer, they could probably, you know, with proper weather conditions, of course, but mm-hmm. you could probably house 100 head on a quarter of land.
That makes a lot of sense because Pennsylvania is a really good deer and elk producing state. The Amish have a lot of elk and deer on their farms. And they've always told me that from a small acreage standpoint, the ability to turn a revenue or a profit per acre is much better with a cervid than it is with a bovine animal.
Oh, definitely. You do have a higher cost for fencing, but I think in the end it all outweighs, you know, the profit when you don't have to have as much land tied up.
Final thing, Holly, we have 1 minute, is that it was quite obvious, again, talking about that invisible border. One word came up 175 times in 1 hour in a presentation this morning. The same word that would come up in a U.S. meeting about animal or crop production, and that one word was regulation. There's a problem on both sides of the border.
Definitely. Problem, it's over-regulated. We have good regulations that need to be in place, but there are some regulations that just, you know, it's just continuous. There's always something new coming into play that doesn't make sense.
We have a light at the end of the tunnel, and that's why I wanted my presentation today to be, it's time to trump Trudeau. But it didn't make the program. I don't know what's going on with that, Holly.
I don't know either. I don't get too involved in politics.
Oh, yes, you do. You got to get on top of these regulations, dear, and you're not going to do it without politics.
Well, thank goodness we have a association to help us with all of that.
Yeah. Holly, it's been a pleasure, and I look forward to learning more about the elk antler and elk business in general, and you're going to have to come to Nebraska.
Sounds like a good plan.
I'm Trent Luce from Edmonton, West Edmonton, Alberta. Luce Trails and Tales. Always remember, be gentle, stay firm.